Welcome to This Week in Lotus. The weekly roundtable discussion of all things social, collaboration, technology and community. Here's your host, Stuart McIntyre.
This Week in Lotus, episode 44 for Monday 28th March 2011. What is the TCO of RAD in an SMB? This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. You can find this and other tech-related podcasts at techpodcast.com. This Week in Lotus is sponsored by Audible, the destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available worldwide. Want to be well-read like Duffer, but just can't spare the time to read books on paper? Take an audiobook on your commute or whilst walking instead. We've got a special offer for you. Download and listen to a best-selling book every month for just $7.49 a month for the first 3 months, and you can cancel at any time. Pick from over 85,000 audiobooks from business to classics to sci-fi or comedy. Go to thisweekinlotus.com/audible for all the details.
BLUG, the Belgium-Luxembourg Lotus User Group, is hosting a third major event on the 31st of March and the 1st of April this year. 2 fully packed days, more than 40 sessions, and many of the best speakers in the community. You are welcome to join us in Antwerp in Belgium. It will be exciting and it will be free. Please visit www.blug.be for full details on the agenda. But register ASAP, because seats are running out fast. Remember, blug.be.
Hello and welcome to This Week in Lotus. We're back for episode 44. I'm Stuart McIntyre and once again I'm joined by Darren Duke. Hi there, Darren.
Good morning, Mr. Stuart. How are you?
I am very, very good. Thank you. Sorry, we're recording this somewhat late. Real life got in the way of This Week in Lotus just for once.
And it took 44 episodes to get that way. So I would quite happily go another 44 episodes before we have another schedule and... I guess FUBAR was really indeed. What it was.
Indeed. So we're going to be a bit late this week, but hopefully people will still enjoy the content we deliver. Let's see. We're joined by a good friend of This Week in Lotus, Sharon Bellamy. Hi there, Sharon.
Hi, Stuart. Hi, Darren.
Hello. For those that haven't come across you before, Sharon, what's your job and where do you work? And fill us in.
I work for City University in London, and I literally do everything that is IBM related in any way, shape or form. So connections portal, same time, TDI, TAM, and everything else that goes along with it.
I think that's all the acronyms. I think you covered every single IBM acronym.
I had a go, yeah.
can we put you down for exceptional web experience as well?
Not yet, no, I'm working on that.
and Sharon, even better, is willing to drop everything with 20 minutes notice and join This Week in Lotus. So thanks for joining us today, Sharon.
No problem.
Brilliant. Well, as usual, we will run through some of the news from around the community this week and just have a bit of a discussion, a bit of a roundtable debate about what's going on and finish off, as usual, with our tips in about 50 minutes' time. So, Darren, let's kick off with something we kind of deliberately avoided last week when we had the cast of IBMers on this call, which is the CNN Fortune profile of Sam Parmisano that was doing the rounds sort of a week or 10 days ago. This was a very positive review of progress under the CEO. I guess he's been in place for nearly 10 years now, and really talk about how he's kind of moved IBM on. Did you get a chance to read that one?
I did. It was a rather long article that pretty much should have just been the conclusion, this man can walk on water, I think was the outcome. And, you know, I actually think it was a pretty good profile of him. There was a lot of bar charts and line graphs showing earnings per share and, you know, what percentage is not hardware anymore. You know, that's kind of a minuscule part of their business now. So it was an interesting article from that standpoint, but I think the standout is that the yellow bubble is not the most evil place on the planet. Apparently ex-IBMers had all their knives out, because there was a lot of negative comments on there about, his quote-unquote destruction of the US workforce for IBM.
Yeah, it's pretty controversial comments on there. And there were a few positive comments from IBMers, but a lot of negative ones in terms of some of the cultural changes and some of the offshoring that's gone on. But if we just stick to the content of the article for now, Sharon, did you have a chance to read this? It certainly reads like he's done some pretty good work for IBM in terms of transforming it from what was a hardware-based business, as Darren said, to being very much around services and software going forward.
I did read it, and I did think, similarly to Darren, that it was an exceptionally long article, and the guy could do no wrong as far as the person that wrote it. I mean, obviously working with IBM software for the last 10 years or so, I have noticed a change, and it isn't until you get past the article and start reading what the ex-IBMers and the current IBMers, and there seems to be quite a lot of people that say they're still very proud to work for IBM, and they really do appreciate what this guy has done for their company. So I think you've got to take it with six of one and half a dozen of the other, unless you actually are an IBMer and you've experienced this firsthand.
Exactly. So, we're all looking from the outside, and it's hard to know, what's kind of real and what's kind of, just bad vibes coming from, obviously, the people that have been resource actioned over the last 5 years. You know, you got to feel bad for them. But I guess in today's climate, bad economy, focus on shareholder value and so on, some difficult decisions have to be made, whatever the vendor is.
Well, and one of the phrases that came out of Lotusphere beyond get social, do business was shareholder value. I must have heard that at least two dozen times in various presentations. So, it's getting down to the business unit executive director level that, look, this is a publicly traded company, and at the end of the day, my feeling at least was screw what the customers want, screw what the partners want. It's all about shareholder value. And my take on reading the article is, just like a lot of U.S. mega corporations, it looks like the shareholder value is being – a lot of it is being driven by cost savings. And my worry is that that cannot go on. That is that's not a viable business model. So they have to – while they have – by the looks of things, in the last decade, I guess it looks like they've almost doubled revenue. It went – I can't add them up in my head fast enough. But it went from sort of like $10 billion up to – close to $20 billion over the last 10 years. Yeah. There is a growth in the business. But with the offshoring, with the lack of support, I can't remember when I issued a PMR and I talked to a native English speaker in the last 4 years.
And that's the challenge, isn't it? Is continuing to take money out of the business in terms of offshoring and reducing costs whilst not affecting either the quality of the product or the quality of the service, and that's the difficult bit. And I think if we look across any of the companies that I work with, wherever a major group of support people in particular have been offshored, the support levels inevitably go down. They don't necessarily understand the problem as well, or aren't as well trained, or whatever it might be, or more remote from the issue, and it's hard to keep those quality levels up. But I guess IBM is trying hard to do that whilst also taking money out of the business wherever they can.
Well, it's experience levels. It doesn't matter who you offshore. If you suddenly offshore a 20 year experienced person, and you put a 1 to 5 year experienced person in their place, the quality is going to go down, and it's going to be noticeable. Yeah. There's nowhere to hide that. Now, you can hide that by increasing your revenue twofold and increasing your earnings per share almost eightfold. But the fact of the matter is that, the people on the streets, the people who are paying you good money so you can increase your earnings per share, they're the ones being affected whenever they're calling for support.
I've noticed that. I've definitely noticed the quality of support has gone down over the last 4 or 5 years. And there is, you do end up with somebody that's not as experienced for a long time before you can get past that and get them to push it up to somebody that actually does know what your problem is.
And this is one of my worries about the whole we're going to cross-brand. I think it's inevitable that that's coming. In fact, it's already here. But the problem we find from a support perspective of cross-brand is it's never one brand's fault. Oh, you're on an I-Series running Domino. That's an I-Series problem. You call the I-Series people and they're like, no, that's a Domino problem. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like when you've got the customer web experience and you've got six or seven brands in there.
I am experiencing that right now with a connections and portal call.
There you go. Oh, is this a much vaunted LTPA issue?
Yes.
Aha.
Yes, so I am having a problem where it's kind of working, and I'm having issues with Portal talking to connections, and the Portal people thought it was a connections problem, and the connections people originally thought it was a Portal problem, and now I think the WebSphere security people have got it, so both people have kind of washed their hands of it temporarily for the time being. But, you know, we are going to get this as we're losing the brands, and we're all going to be one big happy family. So I think
Look on the bright side, Sharon. At least it can only transfer you to two more possible brands before you've completely exhausted the list.
Oh, yes. Oh, joy. I shall look forward to that then.
It's a Tivoli problem. No, it's a rational problem.
and one last point on this. There's a comment made in the thread by a chap called Paul from Portsmouth. So I guess he's probably an ex-IBM. I don't know. Maybe a current IBM. And it talked about how IBM has returned $18.6 billion to shareholders through dividends and share repurchases, which is something I wasn't aware was going on. So IBM is basically buying back shares, I guess, so that you have a reduced number of shares available. Therefore, the dividends are higher per share. And that's how they get their earnings per share. So it's kind of it's an interesting business model that they're almost paying more out in dividends and share repurchases than they made in profit last year. And you've got to think this isn't sustainable. So they're going to get to a certain point where these earnings per share targets are hit. And then where do they go from there? You know, is that really the way to target a company to have this kind of artificial threshold of money to return to shareholders versus talking about actually, you know, finding new customers, selling more software, you know, whatever the real targets are in terms of achievable goals for the company.
Well, and that's really honestly kind of how it's done at big business. If the interest rates are low enough that they can issue a bond, they will issue a bond option and then take the money from a bond, buy back the stock, which has a twofold thing. One, that you just said, increases the EPS, but two, increases the share price, which keeps everyone happy. So, you know, it's really swings and roundabouts. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors that goes on in big finance, in these big businesses where they're leveraging themselves at the wazoo in order to inflate a share price. I'm not sure if IBM's doing that, but, you know, my guess is the rest of the Fortune 100 does. Why not this one? My main thing about reading all of this, and this is not just IBM, this is Intel, it's Google, is, you know, but in the States, Barack Obama has spent a lot of time building this, you know, a lot of high business types to come in to tell them how to create jobs in the US. And all these people are sat around the table. So you got the Googles, you got IBM, they're all sat around the table. And yet none of them really are creating net new jobs in the US. In actual fact, they're all destroying them. So why are these guys sat at the table telling the president how to create US jobs when, as a man, almost none of them are creating net new jobs in any part of the West, not just the US?
Yeah, we're certainly seeing that in the UK. You know, the IBM workforce has dropped significantly over the years, and I guess same's true of many other vendors. Just a last point on this. There's also an article in the show notes about Sam's compensation jumping 30% last year to $31 million. Very nice money if you can get that. That's terrific for him that he's clearly earning so much.
It's a nice pay raise, isn't it? You know, that's like a $10 million pay raise. I'd be sufficient just for $10 million. You don't give me a pay raise, just give me the $10
million. I'm with you on that one.
I don't blame them. You've got to try and keep the best people in the job. I think what's going to be interesting is who replaces him, because he's got to be coming up towards the end of his tenure in the next, you know, 24 to 48 months, one would expect, given his age and kind of what happens at IBM. But that's, you know, that's usually over here, your pension and your payout is usually based off your last average of your highest of your last 5 years. So maybe we're trying to bump up his retirement plan as well.
Maybe so. My last point on this is in terms of the feedback that have been on those blog articles. Clearly, you know, these aren't just news articles in the press. These are actually blog articles that have blog comments on. With regard to IBM being a social business, do you think it's up to anybody to respond to those kind of comments on those blog posts, or is that something that you know, they should leave well alone and it's just out there, kind of recognised it's there, but actually they should be dealing with it privately and internally rather than on public domain sites?
Occasionally, your head in the sand is a very good strategy, and I think this is maybe one of it. You can't win by engaging on this. The truth is that people have been resource actioned. As one person said in the article, and I've heard you know, personally, but, you know, the IBM managers are told you have to fire 20% of your workforce every year. I've actually heard that myself. You're going to have some vitriol, and I think it's fair, but you're only going to excite it even more by commenting and responding as an IBM on official capacity on this. You're just whacking the bee's nest with a stick.
I think you're right on that one. Okay, moving on. One of the other articles that came up last week, we didn't have a chance to get to on This Week in Lotus, was an article on Business Insider about the number of iPads and tablets to be sold in 2011, suggesting there'll be 50 times as many tablets sold to enterprises as in 2010. Sharon, you've just picked up an iPad, I know. How do you kind of feel about the tablet kind of revolution? And do you see enterprises like your own sort of taking them on this year?
And do you speak to your spouse anymore?
we do argue. Well, not argue per se. We do squabble over it when it comes to bedtime, because we both like to lie in bed, you know, do a bit of surfing. You know, he's completely addicted to Angry Birds. So yes. But before I had one, I honestly could not see what all the fuss was about. Since I have had one, I do not know how I could have ever lived without it. Because, yeah, it's good you can play games on it, but I use my email on the move. I use it for taking notes. After Louis Benitez took the mickey out of me quite terribly at Lotusphere for writing things down on a piece of paper, I felt I had, you know, to get in with the cool kids and get a tablet. And since I've had one, I use it everywhere for taking notes, whether they be business-related notes or just things that come into my head. So I do struggle if I leave it now. It's like I've left part of my life behind. And we are using them in the university. There's a big push to use Kindles and iPads to download our... We do have a lot of online books and a lot of PDF files and a lot of e-books, and they're looking at using those ebook readers, basically, so students can check them out and take away their whole semester's worth of course notes on them. So it's definitely something the university's looking at.
If you left yours at home and you went to the airport, would you buy one from the airport?
I don't know whether I'd go to that extreme, but, you know...
I've heard some might do that.
I can understand completely why somebody may necessarily do that, yes, and then you know, sell it on.
Sorry, Stu, I couldn't resist. That was
no, I understand. I mean, looking at this article, it's interesting. We were talking about 50 times the number of tablets to enterprises. Well, actually, the number they're talking about in 2010 is only 20,000 tablets. This market research just was sold to enterprises. Now, given that Apple sold in the region of 7 million iPads last year, clearly they are mostly going to consumers, like, you know, like Sharon and myself probably bought them for ourselves, rather than actually enterprises buying them. So I guess what we're talking about here is a shift to the companies buying them as business purchases, and that assumes that there is a business justification for buying a tablet, which is something I've struggled to actually come up with. Is there a killer app, a killer reason for actually needing a tablet in a business environment? And I guess people are starting to come up with those killer reasons.
Well, I couldn't give you a killer reason. It is a very good, as you've said, Stuart, it's a very good consuming device. So I now seem to read a whole lot more books, and Amazon's share prices have probably gone up considerably since I bought mine because of all the Kindle crap I'm buying on my Galaxy tablet. And it's always handy just to be able to, you know, fire it up, check the weather, do I need to take an umbrella? And note to Americans, we don't call it a bumbershoot. Strange questions I get asked about here. But what is the business value of it? That's the difficult thing. It's still, to me, it's a very difficult creation device. I've always had issues with touchscreen keyboards, and this is just the next generation of a touchscreen keyboard. So I'm still trying to come up with a business reason, but the numbers are actually kind of interesting, because like you said, Stu, it was only 20,000 tablets, quote unquote, or pads last year, and they're expecting 1.1 million. I'm guessing this is in the US, in the UK only. And to put that into context, so 1.1 million tablets in 2011, Apple expects it's going to sell 50 million tablets to consumers and only 32 million netbooks and then 113 million notebooks. So, you know, the tablet is really where the growth is, because it looks like the growth of tablets is up 200% and the growth of everything else is pretty much negative in the case of netbooks, or stagnant in the case of actual laptops.
And of course, looking at the iPad 2, which I know has been out in the States for a couple of weeks, but just started shipping in the UK last Friday, there were queues of 200, 500 people outside some of the major Apple stores. So clearly the demand is there, and they will continue to be shipped in enormous numbers. It'll be interesting to see how they get taken on by businesses going forward.
Well, and the other thing that no one's mentioned yet is the much vaunted playbook.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to take off myself, which means it's going to be a stellar success, because I always bet on the wrong horse in these bets. So if anyone go out and buy Rimstock, because I think they're going to go bankrupt in 4 years.
You've been saying that for a while now. I'm interested to see if it works out that way. I mean, certainly I had a play with the playbook at Lotusphere, and I mean, in terms of specs and performance and the way it multitasks, it looks like a killer device. It's just whether the App Store and the way that BlackBerry allowed to tether it and all those kind of things matches up to the lead that Apple and to some extent some of the Android devices have already got over it. It'll be interesting to see how it works out.
Well, I say an Android apps will run on it.
Ooh. Yeah, be interesting to see how well they do. Okay, and next on our topics list was an event that Sharon and I attended last week, which was the Dacus Group Social Business Summit. They've been running 4 events around the world, in Australia, Austin in the States, in London, and I think they're in Singapore next week. And Sharon, what was your thoughts about the event? I mean, first of all, why did you attend? You know, what made it an event that you wanted to be at?
Well, originally one of our upper management was going to go, but he double booked himself to an IS event for universities in Edinburgh. So so I was allowed to go in his stead, me being the social person in our organisation. The reason that I wanted to go specifically, because it wasn't aligned to any particular technology, I thought it would be a good idea to go to get views on how social fits in with business without it being tech related, because everybody always gets tied up with the technology behind these things. And it just did seem like a great event to go to. Although looking at the agenda, I was a bit worried that not all of it may be relevant to me or to our business. But after attending, I was very wrong on that part, I'm glad to say. And I found every session there was something relevant in it to how we work here or how we would like to work here. So it was well worth the effort to go.
Absolutely. So this was held in London, even. Got Lotus on the brain today, I wonder why. So in London, it was, I guess, about 400 people attended it. And some of the speakers were really notable. So IBM were there. They had Stuart McRae, one of the sort of foremost social people in IBM UK, presented on behalf of Lotus. They obviously had some people from Dacus Group and Headshift, who are the sort of arm of Dacus in the UK. But they also had some really good speakers from outside. There was a chap called JP from Salesforce.com presented, I thought, a really good session on how sort of the working environment is changing. And Sharon, in terms of it being sort of technology agnostic, I guess having been to events like Lotusphere before that are so focused on the technology that are being used, did you find it interesting at that kind of level, or were you looking for them maybe to guide us a little bit more in terms of the technologies you should be using?
Most people that were there either had some kind of tech that they'd already had in place or were thinking about putting in something specific. So to get a view of just social in general without it being tied to any technology. I mean, and the speakers did mention a raft of technologies from connections to SharePoint to Jazz to lots of other things that I'd never even heard of that people are using. So it was really useful for it not to be tied to any technology, and it was just more of a general, this is what you do if you want to do social business.
Absolutely. And I was just really impressed with it as a conference, and I recommend that if they run these kind of events in maybe more different venues next year. Certainly people try to get a long term. I found it fascinating to hear some of the case studies in particular as to how social is transforming some of these businesses. I mean, Nokia did a really good session. A lady called Ming Kwan from Nokia presented on how they're trying to sort of transform their internal communications and collaboration using social technology. And that was fascinating in terms of the direction they're going and the progress they're making. She had some really good stats around how they've improved some of their business processes. So yeah, it's a good one. If anybody is interested in attending the Singapore one, I think that's in the next week or so. So have a look on the website. We'll have the link in the show notes for that session.
Yes, and don't forget to mention the jazz, Stuart.
The jazz, of course. So this was, typically when you go to events, the graveyard shift is just after lunch. It's always difficult to get the audience kind of engaged in that hour or so after people are fed and watered. And so they did something a bit different at this event. They had a jazz band come on, talking about how kind of jazz is collaborative innovation, how you get kind of this framework for collaboration in terms of some of the music timing that they've kind of agreed on as a band, but then how the different musicians can kind of overlay their own innovation, their own ideas on top of that, and how that related to business. Did you enjoy that, Sian?
I thought that was one of the highlights of the day, to be honest. Everybody was sat there after lunch not knowing what the hell was going to go on, and we had, I don't know, maybe 40 minutes of real-time audience collaboration and participation. There was quite a lot of embarrassed people, but pretty much most people got into the groove, and it was actually a really, really good session. There was lots of singing and dancing and hand clapping occurring. But the way that, I think his name was Michael Gold, the guy that was, he really got everybody sort of thinking about how, you know, they collaborate on the fly when they're making this jazz music, and it you can relate it to in your workplace, because, you know, chances are when you first start doing these things, people don't want to talk to each other, and they are embarrassed to talk to people that they've never met before. So it was actually really, really good, and I did record some of us all making music, so I'll try and drag that off my phone and upload it somewhere. Don't say no to it. It was very good.
Okay, and one of the other kind of discussion points that's been going around the community in the last couple of weeks is around Domino and whether it really is rapid application development. And of course, we kind of know Notes and Domino as being rad type environments for years. You know, we always talked about it being a really good place to do prototyping of new apps and so on. And was it Jake that kicked this off, Darren?
It's always Jake that kicks this off. Yes, it was. And to kind of use a phrase that no one except the Americans will know, I think last week was March Madness domino style. And for the non-Americans, March Madness is what they call the college basketball 64-team playoff that happens in March.
Okay.
So Jake came up with a post and said, is Domino really so rad? And was able to, in Visual Studio, using some type of framework, which is, I think, is an important fact here, but he did use a framework, but he was able to knock up a quick, you know, example application in something like 3 minutes and 24 seconds and kind of threw out the question is, can this be done in Domino? And both Simon O'Doherty and David Leedy went away and came back with screen cams and said, yes, it can. And look here, not only that, but it's reasonably easy to add security. And I think what gets lost here is, you know, RAD is rapid application development. It's not rapid application demonstration. And I think we're losing sight of that, that a lot of people spend a lot of time creating 5-minute demos. It's really from... Not from prototyping, but from the application standpoint itself, that I think the time saving has come. And I think Domino still is rad. I have never thought that there were no other applications out there. And I'd be surprised if any other Domino developer on the planet thought that as well. But it's worth pointing out that, you know, it's took the rest of the world the better part of a decade to catch up where Domino was in 2002, 2003, when IBM all but neglected it for another decade. So I think it's interesting to compare and contrast, but I think we need a bit deeper compare and contrast than just, here's a contact record, there's a view, look how quick that was. Because that's not an application, that's a form.
Yeah. I thought David Leedy in particular, I haven't seen Simon's one, but David Leedy did a great demo that is up on YouTube that you can have a look at in terms of, as you say, creating that really basic CRUD app. But it would be interesting to see, maybe somebody can come up with a spec for an application that's a little bit more involved than that, that they can kind of compare and contrast the two environments they're developing. I think it's interesting debate. If nothing else, it focused people in the community on what really is important about Domino in terms of the rapid application development. And maybe it will focus IBM's kind of designers on it in terms of looking at those demos and seeing actually what are the pieces that take the time. Can we improve the process around that and make it easier, faster, to do those kind of things? And Sharon, well, I know... Go on.
And look at things like deployment. You know, how long did I've deployed .NET apps, I've deployed Portal apps, I've deployed Connections, I've deployed QuickerJ, I've deployed QuickerD, and I've deployed Domino. And I can tell you which one of them is the easiest, Domino, yeah. Right? File database new or file database new from template, and you're done. I mean, people are overlooking, you know, but you've got to understand, and this is probably a conversation on the next topic, is the TCO is getting lost here. That if I need six people or it takes me 12 weeks to deploy something, then was it really cheaper?
And of course, you blogged about this, didn't you? So, do you care whether Domino is rad or not? What really matters is TCO. And do you think Domino is stacking up pretty well in terms of TCO still at the moment?
Not if I've got more than five people. That's the simple math, and I don't think anyone at IBM has ever done a TCO model against Domino themselves. Sean Cole, I think, is suffering through his quite spectacularly. You know, we've got the much vaunted application specific licensing, which I can't talk to because I've not looked at it, but someone did DM me and say there's still some like 200 seat limit in ASL or something like that. I haven't looked at the license, so don't quote me on that. But I think, you know, they don't understand where it fits. They've never really understood where it fits. And because of that, they come out with these, you know, stupid, horrendous licensing schemes, which admittedly Ed is trying to address. But the point of the fact is that every 3 months it takes to address this, God knows how many customers walk out the door.
And Sharon, I know you're not directly involved in Domino, but there is some aspect of Domino Notes in your company. Do you think people outside of this kind of yellow space get what Domino and the Lotus products offer in terms of development environments?
In a word, no. Most people that I talk to that are in our business that don't have anything directly to do with Domino or Notes in any way, shape or form still think it's a legacy app and are surprised that it's still alive, which is shocking, really. Just literally because I think other than when it was R5 and those Dennis Leary adverts were on TV, was it R5? That was the last that the world outside the bubble knew that Domino and Notes existed, so...
Oh, come on, there's been Lotus Notes posters, at least in my office.
I've not seen a lot of Lotus Notes in the UK, to be honest, which is a shame.
Well, and it goes back to a conversation I was having the other day with someone who I won't talk to. I won't name. But they asked me a question. They said, how many Domino ISVs are there? And I struggled to come up with more than five. And I'm a pretty big believer that the vitality of a product or a platform is kind of directly proportional to the number of ISVs developing to it. You don't want everyone to have to create their own CRM from scratch. You don't want everyone to create their own X from scratch. But there's not a lot of vendors out there. You know, you've got the likes of Group who sell a lot of products like their Relevus CRM. You've got Adexis, who is a CRM vendor. You've got Elguji that sell Idea Nation, I guess is the phrase of that kind of stuff. But beyond that, I'm kind of struggling. And that's a pretty damning condemnation for what IBM has done to the product line and Domino itself. But they cannot bring ISVs to the platform, or they're not. And the ISVs they do bring, I mean, I remember someone had mentioned 20,000 Microsoft product partners signed up for Lotus Foundations. You're going to have a hard time attracting them back again.
Yeah, so right on that one. I hope it doesn't have that much of a bad impact what happened with Foundations, but as you say, that was a very big big part of their advertising around foundations was how many ISVs they signed up. Well, I mean, looking at the positive, Ed Brill does suggest in the comments on your blog, Darren, that that he's doing a lot of work, and you know, particularly since he took on the development side of the Notes and Domino product line back in January, I think it was, that he's trying to build some ideas and some work around getting more ISVs and more apps on the Domino platform. So let's just hope we see some movement in that over the next 3 to 6 months, and I should say that the other vendors don't get too far ahead with that in the meantime. So something else that came through Planet Lotus I saw early on this week was a blog post that made me look 3 or 4 times at the
me
title.
Me too.
Which was Phil Salm blogged obviously about an idea that he had that another vendor should buy Lotus, but the way he worded the title seemed to suggest it already happened. Did you see this, Dan?
I did. I looked at it and I was like, really? And then I clicked on it. I'm like, oh, okay. This is what I dreamed about last night post, because it was worded as if Cisco had bought the Lotus division from IBM, and I double taked a few times on it, and I was like, is this a made up one or what? You know, he has a few good points. And I know, Stuart, you've been pretty vocal on saying, you know, IBM needs to shut up or get out and sell it off to someone that cares. I'm not sure Cisco is the person, because, you know, Cisco do a very good job of, like IBM do, of coming up with stupid ideas and then killing them 6 months in after they've just sold a lot of customers on it. But they do have the entire WebEx, you know, portfolio inside of Cisco. And I think Lotus, either way, the bolt onto that could be very good. I think the fact that, you know, the Gartners of the world are saying social is going to take off and be a multi-billion dollar business in a couple of years is all but killed any fantasy of IBM selling Lotus off.
I think you're right. I think the products in the Lotus brand are probably more important to IBM now than they've been in the last 5 years. So I don't think we'll ever see that. But it's certainly interesting. People are thinking sort of outside the box in terms of what might happen to Lotus going forward. And it'll be interesting to see whether there's... There were no comments on that blog post, which quite surprised me. I imagine people were going to jump on it and say, you know, either it was a good or a bad thing. It'll be interesting to see whether we hear any more on that in the future. Another controversial post that happened this week was from a good friend, Carl Tyler, who suggested that perhaps the Notes client needs to be dropped. And I don't think he made it quite as clear as that, but certainly suggested there should be maybe a new kind of Notes client that doesn't try to cover all the legacy stuff that the existing Notes client does. Sharon, did you see this? Do you see that as being a way forward, to have a new kind of client that does some of the good stuff that Notes does but doesn't have the baggage around it?
I think that would probably have rescued it here, to be honest, because one of our schools had email via Notes and Domino, and now they just have applications. We took their email away, and it was mainly to do with the client and the lumpiness of it and the fact that they were quite a way behind. They've upgraded it to 8.5 now, but there does seem to be a lot of stigma around the Notes client for some reason. I personally love Lotus Notes and think it's absolutely brilliant, and I would like to use it as my mail client and other things, but I can't. But I do understand why people do think it's clunky and don't like it, just because of all the issues that have been way back when. I think if they make it look cool and sexy, like they were attempting to show us at Lotus Fair, then a lot of people may get slightly more excited about it. But I think you're right, they do need to drop some of the legacy stuff and concentrate more on all the cool stuff it does and all the ways it can help you collaboratively.
Darren, how would you see your customers going for this? Do you think that they'd be interested in something like a new Notes client that does, you know, that is a bit more lightweight, a bit more kind of social focused?
You mean Vulcan? just to coin a phrase there. You know, Carl had a good point. It's been brought up elsewhere. But we don't need a Notes client. What we need is a lightweight application framework, you know, a la X Pages all by itself, with none of the quote unquote other stuff. But what does the other stuff entail? Does it not entail security? Does it not entail roles? Does it not entail replication? Does it not entail an NSF? So I think, you know, the decoupling of this is maybe a bit more difficult than I think we would understand. However, I had heard on a back channel a few weeks ago or a few months ago now. It was around the time of Lotusphere. I got someone drunk and they told me stuff they shouldn't have told me. That's one of the advantages of not drinking alcohol, by the way. At 2 a.m. in the morning, you get to find out a lot of crap that no one else knows.
Why do you spend so much time in kimonos at Lotusphere?
That's why, yes. That's why I'm always drinking the Red Bull, never the Red Bull and vodka. But what I was told is that there was a lot of enthusiasm inside of IBM for a headless designer. And the way that was kind of explained to me was, think of Domino Designer, but from a web-based tool only, to allow you to create X Pages apps without needing the full-blown designer client. And the way it was told to me, there was a lot of enthusiasm, and they were starting to see what the feasibility of that was. And then somewhere in this post, Ed Brill had already kind of hinted that, hey, we're already looking at this. I think it was the first comment. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of stuff is that I was told that I said I wouldn't mention until it was maybe a bit more public. It's starting to come public, so I can mention it now. I think it's a good idea. Is, you know, everyone's got to understand that everyone's looking for the one thing that's going to save Domino. And, you know, I'm not sure it's going to take one thing or whether 50 things could save what is happening to it. You know, the Notes client, like Sharon said, when I go back and I look at an R7 client, even I cringe nowadays. And I loved it. I love Notes. That's what I use day in, day out. There's just some quirky stuff about it that people don't get, people don't understand. And I think IBM need to go out and they need to start looking at the competitors' products and maybe building a matrix to say, what do we do well? What do they do well? What do we have to do to get our product up to what they do well? And if every product they do, be that Notes, be that Connections, yeah, be that Same Time, be that Quicker. Go look at Skype, go look at Dropbox, go look at Microsoft Outlook, go look at everything else. Go look at Visual Studio, which is a beautiful IDE, by the way. And just start playing that way. You know, I don't think they do that much analysis on what the other people are doing beyond buying the Gartner report and saying, okay, this is where we need a head. Go out and look at Outlook 2010. Go out and look at Outlook 2007. For God's sake, go and look at Outlook 2003, which is still, honestly, kind of head and shoulders above Notes as far as a mail client goes. And that's kind of a damning condemnation coming from me.
And I think to use them as well, I think looking at them is fine. I think using them, you know, all day, every day for some aspects of your workflow teaches you more than anything about what the good and the bad points are, you know. And I think, yeah, that's what makes people love the Notes client. If you do use it as a center point of your collaboration environment for a length of time, then it's great. If you just use it for half a day to, you know, to experience it, you'll be, you know, having your head in your hands wondering, you know, why it's designed the way it is. So I think we need IBM and the partners to really get to understand what's great about some of the other products that are out there.
And not just Notes, you know. Would we ever record this podcast on Same Time? Probably never. Because it's not feasible to do that. And it's absolutely feasible on Skype, which is free. I can go and download it, and every week it's on. And I can't say that about any of the Same Time servers I connect to, with the exception of maybe the STS one, because really we don't do any meetings on there. All it is an IM server. And they need to go out and they need to build these matrices and they need to check the checkboxes and they need to have an honest, hard look at themselves. And I think maybe having a headless designer client might attract some folks, specifically, you know, guys who are seriously, seriously looking at Salesforce.com. You know, we hear a lot of customers looking at Google, we hear a lot of customers looking at Microsoft. Honestly, Salesforce.com is where a lot of people are looking to move their apps to.
Yeah. And the shame for me is I think if we went back 5 or 10 years, there were some moves in IBM to look at some of this stuff. So, I mean, do you remember the Notes Buddy client? Notes Buddy was this really lightweight Same Time and Notes email client that just was great for accessing Notes servers. It was so much more lightweight than Notes client of the day. And I think you know, whilst development is clearly the focus area at the moment and going forward, I would love to see something lighter that fully integrated with Domino for emails. I think we could get a lot of users very interested in using that rather than looking at Outlook and others.
I remember that. I used that way back when I was in an organisation that used Domino for their main email, and I missed it when it went.
I mean, that had a great feature where it used to read out your emails to you. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You could set it to read you just the subject or the full transcript of the email. It's a fabulous facility.
I never saw this. I need notes, buddy.
Dig it out. I think it still works against the latest servers. But it'll
you
work
would
on Windows
love
7.
It, Darren. You would absolutely love it. It's just up your street.
I can only imagine how much pass-through HTML there is in there.
Okay, well, moving on. We a couple of weeks ago, I think, had Warren Elsmore on and also Theo about the user groups that are coming up. Well, BLUG is just next week, I think. Is it even the end of this week? It's the end of this week, isn't it? It's Thursday and Friday. Mm-hmm. So that's BLUG. UK LUG is a little bit further away. That's kind of end of May kind of time. But a reason to be thinking about it right now is that abstracts are due in by the 5th of April. So if you're thinking of submitting an abstract or speaking at that event, you need to get cracking with it now. And Darren, we've already heard you're not going to be speaking there. I think you're looking forward to just attending, aren't you? But Sharon, are you going to be submitting some abstracts?
I certainly am. I shall be at least one, hopefully two. Assuming that my alleged co-presenter's not too busy to assist Stuart.
Oh, I shouldn't have led you into that one, should I?
No, you shouldn't. No, hopefully the main one that we're going to submit will be very good if it gets accepted, because not only have I got you assisting me with this, but the legendary Matt Newman has offered his co-presenting skills for the day. So it should be a very interesting one if we get accepted.
And the geekiness quotient will be added to by the elements of Star Wars, I think, that might be involved in that too.
Oh, yes.
Should be great. Look forward to it.
So how many are you putting into it?
Certainly two. We'll see on more than that. No, I'm first of all, I may only be there for a day, so that's going to limit things a little bit. But it's going to be a great conference. I really look forward to it. And I know there's already been a good number of people around the community saying they're going to be attending and submitting abstracts. So it should be an excellent value conference, given, of course, it costs nothing to attend.
Yeah, I think I'm on a speaking hiatus for a while.
Well, we're
going to
definitely get that service.
We'll see how long it lasts. If we look at the agenda and see you listed, Darren.
I'm not doing one at UK LUG. Definitely not doing one at UK LUG. And I'm already trying to go on strike for Lotus Fear 12. That's why I'm getting all of this out, so no one's shocked when I don't speak in Lotus Fear. Make sure.
Okay. Oh, you'll have set the scene by then. Okay, well, that's our news done for this week. So very quick rush around what's been going on in the community. As usual, we finish our podcast by asking panelists to name a tip for you, the listener. It may be a site, a gadget, a tip in terms of using a Lotus technology. So Sharon, do you want to kick us off? What's your tip for this week?
My tip is never leave home without your iPad or your tablet if you go into a conference. I would have been lost without mine last week. I used it and Evernote to keep a track of everything that I was doing, synced it up on the fly, and then when I got back to the office, all my notes were there already for me to do. So if you've got an iPad, use Evernote. It's brilliant.
Excellent. I'd certainly echo that. It's a fabulous tool. The other one I tend to use is SoundNote, which I don't think I've mentioned on the podcast before, which not only allows you to take notes, but also to record audio for meetings, obviously with the permission of the people that are in the meetings. But that's a very useful tool too.
And speaking of recording, your tip is?
I intended to record some really good audio from the Dacus conference the other day. In fact, we did record about 10 minutes or so until the batteries ran out on my MP3 recorder. So yeah, a tip from me is make sure you've got spare batteries with you before you attend conferences. But seriously, no, my tip for this week is if you're looking at rolling out Lotus Connection 3, don't just assume it's just Connections 2.5 with some extra gadgets on. It's a much more resource hungry application, particularly at the database end. So where we were running DB2 database servers on 2 gig at 2.5, we're now looking at 4 to 6 gig on Connections 3. So it really is a completely different beast from a sizing perspective. So if you need some thoughts around that, do feel free to get in contact with me. I'll also be blogging about some of the findings we've had from the latest upgrade we've done. It's certainly a different matter completely. Darren, what's your tip?
Well, the last couple of weeks I've been living, breathing and swearing Tivoli Directory Integrator. It's actually a very powerful tool. It's just, as with all things that are XML-based, it's a bit esoteric and, you know, more descriptive or declarative than procedural, so it's a bit of a pain in the backside. But when you get it all working, it actually is kind of phenomenal and can put you out of a job if you're not careful. Because now you don't have to register people in 25 different systems. You just click a button. I actually just schedule it and it runs. But we had a problem with the scheduler. So there's a piece in TDI called the AMC. And we'd log into the AMC and we wouldn't be able to do anything. We'd be able to log in. It's like a WebSphere integrated systems console ISC. But none of the images were showing up. We'd click on stuff and nothing would work. And we kind of went round and round a bit on it, and we couldn't figure out why. Every time we did an install, we ended up with the same thing. And hidden deep, deep, deep within the help docs is that if you do a custom install, run this one command and give yourself rights. Well, we didn't run a custom install, but once you ran the command, which is in the show notes, I won't have the tediosity of reading it out to you right now. But if you're having problems with the AMC on TDI, look at the show notes. The answer's probably in there.
Brilliant. Okay, well, as Darren says, that tip will be in the show notes. So if you're running TDI, I guess it's version 7 we're talking about?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, then make sure you know about that command. That's terrific. I'll make sure I keep a note of that too. So that brings us to the end of This Week in Lotus for this week. Sharon, how do people track you down if they want to follow you or find you?
If they want to find me on Twitter, I am DILF Technical, which is D-I-L-F Technical. And if you want to go and look at my blog, I'm socialshazza.com.
Excellent. That's good. And thanks for joining us today, particularly at such short notice, Sharon. It's great to
no
see you.
No problem. Never is a chore. Always a pleasure.
Is that one Z or two Zs?
Two Zs in Shazza.
Two Zs, Dan.
Zs, sorry, yeah, God damn it.
Oh, yes, sorry, yes. Oh, I couldn't speak the Queen's English. What her old I say?
Oh, Darren, where do people find you?
No Zs, no Zs. Blog.darrenduke.net for all things technical, Lotus-related, VMware-related, BlackBerry-related, and on Twitter, Darren Duke, all one word, for my 140-character rants.
That's a new domain for you, Darren. DominoDazza.com.
Yeah, with two Zs.
Yeah.
Two Zs.
And I'm Stuart McIntyre. You can find me on Twitter at Stuart McIntyre. It's StuartMcIntyre. And the company is CollaborationMatters.com. So this was This Week in Lotus. I look forward to speaking to you next week. Bye.
All opinions expressed during this podcast are those of the participants only and do not necessarily represent those of their employer.
Hi, Warren Elsmore here, and I'd like to tell you about the UK Lotus User Group. This year, the largest Lotus event in the UK will be held in Manchester on the 23rd and 24th of May. As always, we'll have a great lineup of speakers from the IBM community, giving you some of the best administration, development and management information out there. We're also really pleased to be supported by some of the best Lotus partner solutions as well. Attendance at the UK Lug event is free thanks to the generous support of these companies. So, if you'd like to attend UKLUG, put forward a speaker session, or sponsor the event, please take a look at www.uklug.info, and we'll look forward to seeing you in May.
This Week in Lotus is sponsored by Audible, the destination for the widest selection of digital audiobooks available worldwide. Want to be well-read like Duffer, but just can't spare the time to read books on paper? Take an audiobook on your commute or whilst walking instead. We've got a special offer for you. Download and listen to a best-selling book every month for just $7.49 a month for the first 3 months, and you can cancel at any time. Pick from over 85,000 audiobooks from business to classics to sci-fi or comedy. Go to thisweekinlotus.com/audible for all the details.